welcome everybody to Your Music Your Way, the powerful path of improvisation for accessing innate genius and liberating your essential gifts. I'm really excited to be here with my old friend, Gary Phillips. We have several stories together from back in the 90s, and I'm really excited to have you with us, Gary. We're going to have a, I'm looking forward to this conversation. This is going to be super fun. The overall vision for this thing is that we are in the midst of massive amounts of unknown. You know, we don't really have a sense of you know, what the future is going to be. There's so many, of course, in an election year and this particular.
Amen to that.
Woo! You know, there's just so many. There's so many different ways that we are having to navigate unknown territory. You know, social norms that used to be here aren't. There are so many different perspectives on what reality actually is. You know, things that used to be generally facts aren't necessarily anymore.
There's Amen.
Fundamental things. And we're really having to navigate in ways that I imagine none of us as children could have, you know, possibly imagined. And so it feels to me like one of the most essential skills that we can learn at this point in time is to learn to navigate the unknown with mastery. And so this whole summit is really about bringing musicians, sound healers, scientists. You just popped out there. I don't know what happened.
My battery's getting low.
Oh, is it? Is there a chance it might go?
I don't think so. But I can also plug it in too.
I wonder if that would just help to secure, because if we
I don't want us just to be interrupted and tossed out. So do you want me to take a moment and do that?
Well, is there any way to just plug it in and do it while it's plugged in?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. That's no problem at all.
All right. Let's do that. That sounds good.
I'll just make that happen.
This conference will now be recorded.
Hi, and welcome everybody to Your Music Your Way, the powerful path of improvisation for accessing innate genius and liberating your essential gifts. We are in a time in history where it seems to me that one of the most essential skills that we could possibly learn is to navigate the unknown. And I am here now with my old friend, Gary Phillips, to explore some of the different ways that we can learn to do that. Gary, thanks so much for being here. I'm so psyched to be in this conversation with you. And I'm really looking
forward. I can't stop grinning. I'm just so pleased to virtual presence.
You know, this is just grand. We can share that you and I haven't seen each other for what, 20 years or so. And you know, we've talked.
I think we saw each other briefly at a service in Asheville.
Right.
When you were,
That's right.
But other than that, really, we haven't had a chance to spend any real time together since we were in extraordinary groups doing extraordinary things.
Right. And you were the best man in my second wedding.
Yes, that's right.
And so, yeah, we did extraordinary things throughout the 90s. And there's lots of stories that are there. But so I'm really psyched about this. And we're having this conversation in the context of this summit where we're gathering, looks like going to be around 30 people who come from many different fields, music improvisation, science, ritual leaders, ceremonialists, acoustical physicists, you know, people, energy healers, people who work in one way or another with sound and or the creative process to bring spirit, you know, there's various ways to say that, to bring spirit, to bring authenticity, to bring something of the magical nature of who we really are underneath the physicality of us to bear in the world. So I'm really curious about how these different perspectives can come together through this conversation that we're kind of building through this summit to kind of raise the bar on that conversation. And so I'm really excited to have you to be a part of this because of your history as an activist throughout your life and a community person who has done so many different things in your community, and as a poet and as the poet laureate of North Carolina. So,
Justin Scarborough, poet laureate of North Carolina is another job entirely.
Okay, well, yes, thank you. I see you as the poet laureate of North Carolina. So
I appreciate that.
So I'll read this. I guess I could have started with this, but Gary Phillips. So you are the. I'm going to stop there. I think I'll just nip all that somehow.
Sure.
So you are the poet laureate of Carrboro, North Carolina, from 2016 to 19. And you're a writer, naturalist, entrepreneur, live in a rammed earth house with your wife, Ilana Dubester. And you avidly read poetry and Afrofuturism, study amphibian activities on full moon nights. And you were once the chair of the Chatham County Board of Commissioners. This man is a child of Appalachia.
Amen.
Casts bones and knows his grandmothers. I love that. A man who casts bones and knows his grandmothers. Gary's book of poetry and occasional pieces, The Boy, The Brave Girls, was printed in 2016 by Human Error Publishing. And he's been published in The Sun Magazine, Independent Weekly, Men's Journal, Missouri Farm Journal, Communities Magazine, Plowshares, the Chatham County Line, the Ransom Street Mag, and NPR. Where he performed regular commentaries as part of Radio Free Bubba. That's one of my favorite names for a an expressive channel. Gary has contributed chapters to several books, including the Environmentally Sound Agriculture, Small Stories, Big Changes, Agents of Change on the Front Lines of Sustainability. And he's participated as a featured poet at the Cervantes Festival, Greenfield Reads, UNC Literary Festival, Conference on Money and Meaning, the North Quabbin Garlic and Arts Festival, and the West End Poetry Festival. And he's meeting with this with us today to talk about. He says, "My life flows on in endless song, gratitude, abundance, and synchronicity." So Gary, what a charge to get to do this with you, my friend, and I'm really looking forward to engaging in this with you.
Absolutely.
So I would love to start with what do you mean by you cast stones and you know your grandmothers? What do you mean by that?
Well, my grandmothers. I come from a kind of self-identified, I guess you'd say, poor white family, very large. But both of my grandmothers are outside that parameter. My grandmother Etta was a bit of a hill witch in Yancey County, North Carolina. And my grandmother Lily was all over the color line. Grandma Etta brought the Cherokee into our line, into the Holloways and the Phillipses, and Grandma Lily was, as I say in one of my poems, just light enough to pass but not to matter. So they were my two very best friends, my first two very best friends. If it's okay to take a minute, I'll tell you how it comes to the casting of the bones.
Sure. I said casting of the stones. I'm sorry. Casting of the bones.
Yeah. And stones is okay because stones is part of it. Stones are the bones of the earth. I have an extraordinary casting box. I have an amazing box that I built with my friend Jonathan Edwards' inspiration. And the first point of contact or reference I would make to that would be that my grandmother, Etta, in Yancey County, North Carolina, up in Cane Creek, was the postmistress of B-Log, North Carolina, for a quarter century. And from the time I was 5 until the time I was 12, I spent a lot of time with her. And that little post office was filled with women all the time. And my grandmother made tonics.
I bet there was a lot of laughing.
There was a lot of laughing, a lot of storytelling. You know, in my Appalachian rough family, at family gatherings, I had the choice of either going out and hunting or working on cars with men or hanging around the kitchen, learning how to cook and listen to stories of all the women in my family. And I often chose the latter. I often chose to be in the kitchen, to be with the women, to take that as part of my deep and rich heritage and teaching. Mm-hmm. So every now and then, that little post office that I love so much, there would be a woman who had a problem. And she'd come to my grandmother and she'd ask a question. She'd ask for advice. She'd ask for help or healing. And sometimes, once in a while, my grandmother would say, I think we better talk to the bones about that. Right? Mm-hmm. And she had a little leather bag, little hand-sewn leather bag with 6, 8, 10 little bones in it, possum bones and raccoon bones. And she would pull those out and throw them on a mat. And then she'd say, oh, now I see what's happening.
Right. Oh, it's that. Oh,
that's right. And I was totally fascinated by that. I've been interested in divining all my life. And about a year ago, I had a magical event that occurred that caused me to come home and build a casting box at my house. And I discovered in my little house, I have a very small rammed earth house, 3 rooms in my little house, that I had 17 boxes saved of small iconic objects and stones and bones and shells, right? Mm-hmm. So I began constructing this basically Yoruban, Appalachian, South African box of right. these objects. Right. And regularly people reach into that box and they throw things down on my mat. And then I talk about what all that symbology might mean. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. So I have a way of looking at all of this. Mm-hmm. You might say a circle, and at one end of it, it is a metaphorical conversation. Right. Mm-hmm. At the other end of it, it is spirit language directly to your heart, and you should listen to it right away.
Yeah.
And I don't have to choose one of those ways of thinking, but it's a kind of ancient thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of year old way of stimulating your intuition to consider what your inner being really is. And then to cast yourself back upon the world in a more clarified manner.
Hmm. Wow, that was spoken like a poet or something. That was amazing.
I do love words.
Uh-huh. Yeah. What a beautiful description. And I'm, you know, it sort of brings my curiosity to the experience that you must have in that process of looking at, you know, the picture that you see before you and kind of, you know, discerning, seeing things and paying attention and being right there present with it. And then kind of noticing what goes on in your mind as you make sense of it. And as you discern what Absolutely. You're seeing.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Is that something that, you continually work on, or you sort of know, you continually learn things about that process each time you do it, I imagine?
Oh, absolutely. That is so true. In that box, there are between 60 and 70 objects. All of them blessed and cared for and paid attention to by me. And things float in and out of that box, depending upon what I learn or what happens. The other thing that's happening is that up to this point, I don't charge in any manner for this thing that I do because I make a living in a different way. But there are people who feel so gifted that they give me things for the box. They'll mm-hmm. find something they think might be useful. And that's been a really interesting, you know, it involves deep and rich and multivalent conversations, mm-hmm. which are one of my favorite things in the whole planet. No matter mm-hmm. what. That's what poetry is, I believe. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. so this provides a field, a background for poetry. Mm. I have a great little gig that I do. Once a month, I go to Arcana, which is in Durham. It's a little black and red, queer-friendly tarot bar, right? And once a month, I just go there, and they give me a table with a light, and I set out my box, and I read whatever piece of science fiction I'm reading at the time, and I just watch what happens. And all it takes is for one person to come up and ask me what the hell that is, and sit down, and then we engage in it. And when the two of us are finished and we look up, there are always two or three or four or five people sort of standing in line saying, mm-hmm. I want some of that. I'm not sure what that is. I've never seen that before, but I want that. I want that.
Yeah. Wow. And I'm hearing this longing for that kind, that like, what is that connection? What is that thing?
Yes.
Really mysterious, yes. And like, what the hell's going on? But I want some of that experience.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
What a story.
Yeah.
And it's that connection, mm-hmm. that sense of, you know, I'm fascinated by the, this longing that we have for deeper connection. You know, I'm curious the extent to which we, as we learn ways to make connection in that kind of way. I was about to ask if you were okay.
I'm very okay, but I do have my little camera has a tenuous connection here. It's caught between two beer boxes and my fingers. So, you know, I'm a guy who talks with my hands, so the damn thing might go anywhere. But I'm trying to hold it steady. I love this. You know, you mentioned one of my favorite words on the planet, improvisation, in your introduction.
Uh-huh.
And I believe in deep synchronicity as another word for magic. And so one of my principles in my facilitation work is the people in the room are the people who should be in the room. What's happening in the room is what should be happening. It may need to be converted. It may need to be healed. It may need to be worked, but we are here. So let us, this is the only moment we have. So let's enjoy it and go forward.
Right. Right. Absolutely. the right people are here.
That's right. That's right.
Well, so Gary, tell me a little bit about your, you know, your engagement in the activist world. And I'd love to hear, sure. you know, some of the ways that you see, this process that you talked about in terms of connecting with the mysterious and connecting with these, you know, symbolic realities and these sort of, mysterious realities. Mm-hmm. How do you connect that in your own experience with the work that you've done as a, you know, as a commissioner, board of commissioners chair, and you know, and an activist in your life, and someone who gets engaged in local activities like that?
Well, I like to say, I did have a small political life for a while that made a lot of reverberations in the community, and we created the first real environmental land use plan in Chatham County and started a human relations board and did a lot of radical work together with a five-person board that was multi-generational, multiracial, very, very interesting. But I like to say I gave up politics for political art and culture because I believe that's what lasts. And that's also where mystery lies. There's not a lot of mystery in electoral politics. There's much more. I love it when there is, And I support it when there is, but there's much more manipulation. There's much more self-interest. Mm-hmm. While in the spiritual world, self-interest is not a very good quality. It doesn't bring you what you want, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I do and am a continual activist. I was a chaplain for many years for Earth First. I create ceremonies and liturgies that are deeply involved in politics. One of the reasons that I ran into you in Asheville is that I've been connected with the Dogwood Alliance for almost 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe deeply in political art. So Dogwood Alliance and I would gather together spiritual leaders of an environmental bent, from Baptists to Native Americans to Buddhists to priests and rabbis. And we would do ceremony before significant national and local public hearings.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd try to define through poetic and religious language what we were really talking about, and do that in a way that tried to make it clear that in every single public way, the environment deserves to have its own voice.
Yeah.
That is constantly speaking to us. Mm-hmm. And that we have to open up channels in order to hear that particular extraordinary loving wisdom.
Yeah.
And the
way that our own lives can be transformed when we allow ourselves to slow down and get quiet enough to listen to that voice and to listen to the
amen,
whether it's the silence or just the wind blowing the leaves or
that's right.
Birds call, and that's, they're speaking to us.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
So I wonder, I wonder how you see sound and music in this picture. You know, what is the role of sound and music in this frame that you live?
That brings on another story. I'm sitting with my mama, an amazing woman who I busted out of the hospital today and took her home.
Mm.
Her name is Mary June Holloway Phillips. And she grew up in the high mountains of North Carolina on the Tennessee border. And let's see, articulate your question once more so I can be more pointed about it.
Okay. So I'm curious what music and sound.
Yes, absolutely. Okay. So I have a famous pachachica. Do you know what pachachica is?
I've heard that word, but I'm not sure right now.
It's a way to present design and ideas that was developed by a Japanese firm in Tokyo that basically means 20 slides, 20 seconds a piece. See?
That's all right.
I have a famous one called that really has gotten a lot of attention called Memory That Old Fool. And it begins like this. Up in the mountains where I'm from, there's a ball that's old and round. And from its top, you can see the world. Folks call it naked ground. Folks call it naked ground.
Mm-hmm.
So, I grew up with a call and response religion that involved a musicality that was deeper than the words the preacher ever said.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And that called you to attention in a kind of way that nothing else could.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes. And in poetry, there must be musicality of some way, even if it's dissonant musicality on purpose to create a meaning. Mm. There is still a musicality.
Mm-hmm.
One of my great and extraordinary privileges is that I have a collaborator named Allison Weiner, who is one of the best jazz musicians jazz pianist in North Carolina, in the whole region. And she is so collaborative. She drags people into her circle all the time. And she regularly backs me with amazing people doing amazing sounds. And we have this thing we're doing right now called Choo Choo Anu, which was a set of curated open space, jazz-backed, spoken word, improvisational performances in at one of the most significant bars in Carborough called The Station. Been there for, you know, half a century. And it's the old train station of Carborough. And so the band starts playing. You know, we got Jeff Clark on the drums and Robert Morgan, and we've got extraordinary people who are playing there. Got Jeff Clark playing the drums, and we got Jeff Brown playing the saxophone. We got Allison on the piano, and we have bassists that come in and out, and we have, you know, Jim Roberts. We've just got an amazing group of people, and I invite the crowd, anybody who wants to walk up and put words in the air with a very significant jazz band behind them.
Wow.
And it buoys them in a way. I've taken people who've never been on stage before and some of the best writers in our state, and it has surprised all of them, the power of that moment.
Wow. Right.
So that's magic. That's an extraordinary magic there.
Absolutely.
And so, that's part of what I participate in.
That sounds really super cool. My gosh, that's got to be fun for all of you. Revelatory, I imagine, for all of you. So I'd like to dig into that experience a little bit. So there's this situation. This person walks up. They've never been on stage before. And talk first about kind of what your experience is, then maybe report on some of the things you've heard them say about it. So what's your experience like when that moment starts and you got this blank canvas, like how do you listen? How do you know what to start with? Like, how do you listen for a thing to start it up?
Well, this has been an amazing process. And I have learned so much by it. So I'm the MC.
Mm-hmm.
And the great.
So you're not really starting the performance itself.
I often do. So this is where I'll because I love liturgy so much and I have disciplines around liturgy, I like to start with some kind of blessing. You know, if it's near a solstice, I will write a poem about everything I see that's happening in nature at that moment and how it's connected to ritual over the past 2,000, 3,000, 5,000 years. Uh-huh. And I'll try to put that out there as a way to lay everything out and how open everything is. And the musicians behind me will play with that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a drummer who's one of the greatest drummers in the world, Beverly Bosford. Many other people would say that. You see, she's got an Asheville presence and all kinds of things.
Well, I knew her from back in the Triangle, but yeah.
Well, one of the things she does is that she plays with dissonance, right? And she and I trust each other enough that she doesn't have to back me up. She can back me back. You know, mm-hmm. I'll say something and she'll make a sharp sound to kind of give a way of making you think about it deeper, right? And that is a gift. That's an incredible, amazing thing.
Yeah.
So part of what I'm learning is that this process allows me to go back into storytelling and out of page poetry, right?
Yeah. And I'm, you know,
and that's
I think
powerful.
That, yeah, it is. It is. And that's kind of what I'm curious about is like when you engage in that process, and you said like the moment when Beverly will play something that makes you think deeper, like, can you describe a little bit of that experience? Like that moment when like, you're like, uh-oh, I've got to go somewhere else. And I don't know what that else thing is yet, but I've got to continue here because, you know, it's on me.
Yeah.
Like, what's that experience like for you? And can you describe how you navigate that for yourself?
Well, my best self knows that in that moment, I need to slow down, right? So part of what this process has taught me, and other poets and other writers too, is that this is a process where you get to actually listen to your words, not just throw them out onto the universe. And that's a very, very different process. It's a deeper process for everybody, right? Mm-hmm. The first time we did this, we didn't even advertise it. It was word of mouth. We had 15, 16 people, a third of them readers. And the owner of the restaurant and the bar came over and gave us his own standing ovation after it was over with. He was so excited about it. And the bartender said, I'm doing this gig every single time you do this. And by the time we finished, six performances later, it was standing room only and people were waiting for somebody to walk out so they could walk in. That just has a power to it, an amazing power. So so the idea of slowing down to play with the band is very powerful. The idea of beginning to develop a musicality within yourself to meet the band, to meet the musicians, is mm-hmm. also very, very powerful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. To meet the band and to meet the musicians, and so sounds like a sense of meeting that energy, whatever that energy that they're playing is like. Right. You're wanting to meet that energy or that tempo or that volume, or like it's this dance.
That's right. It is a dance. Absolutely right. Absolutely right.
That's got to be super, super fun for you to engage in that. Talk a little bit, you know, I'd love to hear a little bit more now about that relationship thing. It's like you're going to do some words. Somebody over here is on drums. So somebody over here is on piano. We got a saxophone. It's like, how do musicians from your perspective engage in this process of everybody? There's a whole bunch of people here that are going to be doing something, making some sounds. What does it mean, or how do you interpret, or how would you articulate that collective creative process where it somehow comes out sounding coherent and whole and of a piece?
It's magical. I don't know how to define it because it's entirely improvisational. In that circumstance, the band does not know what it's going to play. And the poet has an idea of their words and what they might mean in that circumstance. And that idea gets subverted into a sort of magical, as you said, dancing reality. And in that, meanings and performance sort of float up into the air in a way that surprises people. So one of the things I love is somebody's doing something they've never done before, the band's responding to it, and I hear gasps in the audience. They're like, oh my God, I can't believe he said that. I can't believe they did that. I can't believe that riff on that. You know, it's like, it's just like, because you have that freedom. You have that freedom. One of the things, so here's a good little story about that. Our drummer has three big congas that have faces painted on them, right? And the faces are so interesting to me. And one day, the second night we were there, I finally said, hey, tell me what the deal is about the faces on your big drums. And Jim said, well, they're Orishas. And he began finger tapping on his drums, and the drum made a conversation with his story. And he told us about the Caribbean and the Yoruba and this West African way of thinking about the gods and the goddesses and why he put them on his drums. And it was a conversational moment. I know you, I've seen you on drums. It was an extraordinary storytelling moment that he had never done before. And he just got opened up in that moment to do what he had wanted to do for a long time.
Wow. Wow. That's so great. Yeah. And it was invited by your question.
Yeah, absolutely.
Your curiosity.
That's right. My job as an MC is to be curious, supportive, encouraging, occasionally facilitative.
Yeah, little nudgy sometimes.
Once in a while, I have to say, okay, you've done that for 5 minutes and there's somebody else standing in line. Let's all give him a clap. Let's all give him a hand and let him sit down.
Yes, that was lovely. Thank you. That's so great.
Absolutely, dear.
Yeah. Well, I think this is one of, you know, when I sort of take the kind of an experience like you're talking about and sort of step back for a moment, mm-hmm. and just notice that, you know, we have this experience of being individuals. You know, that's how we experience ourselves, okay. is that we're individuals. And but the more you sort of pull the camera back,
that's right.
You know, everything at some point is an individual something, but the more you pull it back, it starts looking more and more like a community.
And
it would be hard for us to argue that any particular ant has any free will, that it's mm-hmm. just doing what it's sort of compelled to do. And it's hard to really argue that we're any different. Ultimately. And so, but I have this experience that we have a free will, or at least, you know, it's that's the experience of it. But in that kind of a context, it's like there's this innate part of us that once we allow something, you know, once we let go of some aspect of our belief system or structure or whatever, we can drop into this natural ability to just start expressing. And I think it's innate in us to know how to dance that sonic, collective expression in a way that it's, you know, enjoyable to do and it's enjoyable to listen to.
Right. And I think we've been limited by our culture in that, and reclaiming that is a really, really important and crucial way of meeting this transition that's happening in the world. Before we leave this conversation, we have to talk about our own group that we were in for years and years, the Chatham County Political Reform Group, because it began out of a Bill Moyer grant to create a multiracial, multicultural political organization in a small key county to create political radical change. But our decision to begin that group with spending 2 days telling personal histories in a retreat transformed everything into the belly of a community event and created a kind of reciprocity, bravery, and lovingness of hard things that meant we could meet across brokenness and difference to love and create new realities in our own community.
Mm-hmm.
And while Pete McDowell was disappointed in that because he wanted political action, 2 or 3 years later, he's saying, well, you did elect a county commissioner and a state senator and 3 members of the school board, and you did create lasting change inside that intimate environment of reciprocity, respect, love, and absolute accountability. That's a good mix.
To
create options in society. That's a good mix.
Absolutely. The intensity and the trust of those relationships was really phenomenal.
Absolutely.
I remember once going to meet with a school board chair to advocate for our friend Linda, who was our African American friend was having was getting messed around by the school system down there, and we went to confront the school board chair about her. And that was a powerful moment.
Absolutely. You know, powerful moment for her. She will say even today that was a bridge moment.
Huh.
That was a bridge moment for me.
Huh.
I walked into that.
What does she mean by that?
She meant that she walked into that room with a certain perception of her relationship with other people, especially white people in her life, and the limitations of that. And she left with a knowledge that there were some, that it was possible for there to be people who would stand up for her in a loving way without pretension, being brave. And that just changed. It changed many things for her.
Hmm.
Yeah.
That's cool to hear.
Yeah. I remember when Margie Ellison broke my heart one day and just fussed at me so hard. And then, you know, I withdrew, and she grabbed a hold of me and hugged me and said, "Gary, you don't understand. I wouldn't do that with you, except I love you." You know, I would not put myself out enough to confront you in that way, except that I believe we're going to be friends today, tomorrow, and the next day too. And that was, again, that was a bridge moment. That was like, hey, this is, you know, you can go into hard territory. As our famous Cynthia Brown, who ran for U.S. Senate 20 years ago now, we used to say, it's time for us to move toward our discomfort, to lean into our discomfort, not away from it.
Because
there's a lot of wisdom there. Yeah.
There is. I'm so glad that you brought that, because that experience with you and that group was one of the just real deep, rich experiences of my life. That opportunity to do that in that, you know, every month for years.
Right.
One of the stories that I tell about that group is that we, you know, I was kind of in there with Pete, you know, I was like wanting to organize around public financing of elections, like, let's get this thing going, you know, let's start, you know, getting out and whatever it's, you know, the streets, or, you know, start advocating. And but we would get together and we would start the meeting with a check-in. And so, you know, you'd start checking in, and then this would share, and then this person would share, and this person would share, and, you know, this person would sort of, you know, each person had a lot to share.
And to unwrap, to unpack. Yes.
And unpack. And by the time, you know, it got around the circle, it was, you know, an hour and a half later. And so and then we would come back the next month and do the exact same thing again.
That's right.
And that went for a couple of years, at least.
Right.
And,
exactly.
And, you know, we would have some conversations. Pete or I would step in and go, you know, I wonder if, you know, we might do a little shorter check-in so we can, like, talk about some of these other things. And we would have a conversation about it in the group. And the group would come to this consensus.
Right.
No, this is really important. We need to do it this way. And so we said, okay, we're going to do it this way. And so it was a commitment to relationship and to sharing these stories that people have. That was number one.
Absolutely.
That was music. That was the music that was wanting
to be. That's right. That's exactly right. That's just the way I would say that.
Well, let's see here. Is there anything else that that comes to mind for you? You know, well, one of the things that I had written down here was about this idea of finding the voice, you know, people finding their voice. We just talked about that, but that seems to be really kind of the essence of what I'd like for this summit to be about. You know, this is about
exactly right.
Who am I? I sort of boil down the challenge of human existence to three questions. You know, one is what's happening now? That's the first question. What's happening now? What's going on? And the second question is, who am I now? You know, who am I?
Amen. That's
who
big.
Am I? And then the next question is, what do I do now? You know, like, what's going on? Amen. Who am I? And what do I do now? And I think ultimately that's what all of living kind of boils down to, is like paying attention to what's going on and then going, okay, who am I? What am I hungry for? What do I need to it? You know, what's my need? What's my contribution? You know, what am I needing or wanting to express or whatever? And then doing the thing, you know, chasing after the rabbit or, you know.
Right. And of course I'd add, who do I love and how do I take care of?
Mm-hmm.
As part of that whole process, because that leads us back to the most deepest parts of ourselves in that sense. One of my very good friends and one of the most admirable singers in America is a woman named Caitlin June. And she calls herself a voice doula.
Nice.
Right?
Nice.
And a doula is somebody who helps create a birth. Now we have death doulas, which I deeply respect, because dying is a kind of birthing. And the idea of a voice doula is finding your voice in a way that also helps complete who you are, help you connect to what it is you need to do next, and releases you from those restrictions you placed upon yourself and against your own genius. So I love that in the sense of finding your voice. I love that. The other thing it makes me think of is that if I say my grandmother was a hill witch, right? I think of myself as kind of a kitchen witch, right? I have a series of little small magics, right? They're very small. They have nothing to do with power. I have no interest in any manipulation of power on that level on the spiritual plane. But one of the things I'm really, really good at is getting together a small group of girls, 6 to 12, 13 years old, and a microphone, and teaching each of them how to use that damn thing, how to play with that thing.
Wow.
So to go to a place like Girls Rock and say, you know, kiss that microphone and tell it what you want. No. Listen to that riff on that guitar and make your voice as loud and as clear as that riff. Play with that. That is a magical woman. I've never been in that environment in which people didn't just come jazzed out of it.
Oh my gosh. Right.
So that's one thing about finding your voice. That's a great thing.
Yeah, yeah. And those young women are changed forever by that experience.
Yeah,
they know from then on that they have a voice. And
they have a voice, yeah.
Yeah. That matters.
It does. Yeah. It absolutely does. I think that's the center and the crux of the Me Too movement. Hey, I have a voice. I'm going to tell my truth. It may be a messy truth. It may not be the perfect truth, but I have a right to tell my truth.
Mm-hmm.
I want everybody to feel that way.
Yeah, absolutely. I have one more question I'd like to ask, and then
sure,
if there's anything you'd like to add anything, you're welcome. But what does synchronicity in your mind, the divination, and you know, that's a perfect example of the principle of synchronicity.
Sure.
The various ways that these sort of miraculous little things happen in our lives, and you know, how do you see that in relationship to musicality?
Oh boy, I feel like musicality, it has a penetrating quality that teaches us how to be human, that takes us away from the negative images that our culture gives us, and allows us to see a glimpse of magic, right? So again, this simplicity I have around this, where I don't want to talk in just spiritual language. I'm happy to talk in rational language. You know, my wife, my extraordinary, amazing wife, is Jewish and from Brazil. And one of the things that some of my most amazing Jewish friends will say, you'll say, how are you feeling? And they'll say, I'm not feeling right now. I'm thinking. You know, I am thinking. I am thinking deeply. That's the way I approach God. That's the way I approach love. That's the way I approach many things, right? And I want the biggest, roundest possible thing that includes everything of who we are and opens us up to who we have always been, but we've ignored. And that's this process. That's this process of, so synchronicity is that. So in my little casting box, synchronicities happen all the time. I did a reading of a mother and a daughter, both of whom I love very much. And it was a synchronistic reading. They reached into my box of 60 or 70 objects and pulled out 85% of the same thing in a 12 to 15 object read. Now, that's not a statistical likelihood, but the way they spread them on the mat was completely and entirely different. And I didn't have to say a word. They looked at those throws and they knew what they meant. They told me what that meant. You know?
That's great.
So I just think that's, I think that's kind of interesting. That's like opening yourself.
Could that possibly happen?
Yes. That's opening yourself up in any way you can to the way the universe is communicating to you all the time. And that's really a big thing. That's a big gift. That's a big gift to move yourself out of whatever your milieu is, to understand that every living creature, the earth itself, the trees you pass. You know, I hope everybody who participates in this entire thing has read the Overstory, Richard Power's book of trees. That's just so amazing, using the new science of DNA and everything else to enlighten us to the worlds that are around us that are so much more complex than we've imagined them to be in every single possible way. And I see synchronicity as one of the tools to do that. So I'm working on a book project.
Cool.
With two men, and one of them is somebody you know, Pat Jobe.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I was thinking of him earlier from the Radio Free Bubba. So yeah.
That's right. He drugged me into the Radio Free Bubba. And the other is Tommy Wiener, who was an extraordinary teacher in Smith Normal School, the elementary school at Smith College in Western Massachusetts, and a member of my men's group turning 40 years old this year, right?
Okay.
The men's group is.
Oh,
so
okay, yeah.
The name of the book is Mr. Wiener's Synchronicity Bell, because in his classroom, he had a chime with seven or eight hanging, singing bells, right? And any child in his class could stand up, walk to the front of the room and ring that bell. And that was saying, I just observed a synchronicity.
Oh,
and
cool.
Then the entire class would break up for 5 minutes to discuss how significant a synchronicity.
How cool
was.
Is that?
Was that just coincidence or was that magic?
That's,
you know,
so cool.
Can you not see that? Isn't that a beautiful image?
Yeah.
And we're talking, he taught 12-year-olds, sixth graders, for 36 years, right? And I love 12-year-olds. There's a lot they know, they still want to learn. They're not cynical yet. They're interactive, imaginative, and magical things happen in those 5 minutes. That was a conversation that those kids carried into their lives and still talk to him about as adults now.
Wow, that is amazing. Yeah. That's amazing. Yeah, just little things like that, you know, talk about, you know, any kind of sound that goes out and you never know what's going to happen.
Absolutely.
Example of, you know, a little practice like that.
That's right.
Probably affects all of those little kids throughout their lives.
That's right. And sound was a very, very important part of it, because that's how you denoted how powerfully you were affected by it.
Wow. That is great. I love that story. That is just incredible. Well, I want to give you the opportunity. You had a gift of that you something that you have to offer to the listeners if they are interested in going to. I'd like to give you the opportunity to make that offering to them and to continue the conversation with whoever, you know, whoever has gotten to see this. And what do you have to?
Well, when I got your list of questions, it was in the middle of a lot of chaos here, and I stayed up till 2 o'clock in the morning and finished it off. And I don't have a YouTube channel, but I discovered that I was kind of all over the place. Huh. I discovered things I had never seen recorded, and I don't remember which one I chose for the URL.
Let's
it may have been my readings in New England.
Greenfield Word, July 17th, 2014. You are. Yep.
That's me reading a series of poems to an audience that has loved me. My publisher, Paul Richman, who is the Beat Poet Laureate of America this year, declared the Beat Poet Laureate of America. Puts on these events for me when I go to New England, and has been very supportive of me. And I've got a crowd of people who come, and it's great fun. And other people read too, but that's one of my first readings in New England is what that is.
That's cool. Well, I'm looking forward to checking that out myself.
Sure.
Gary, this has just been such a delight for me to get to.
Of course. You know, me too.
Hear you. Being you,
and thank you for doing this,
sharing your music in your way. It's really great, and it's good to see you. That's an amazing home, I would love to get out there to the Triangle area, and
I'd like that too.
I'll give you a ring. So
all right, man.
Thank you again.
Thank you.
Be well. We'll stay in touch.
All right, take care. Bye-bye.
You too.
This conference will now be recorded.
I'm going to start recording again. Is that cool? Can I do that?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Of course you can. You can capture anything you want to.
Well, I mean, I'm just curious about this B Corp thing. I mean, I'm not going to just be for
sure.
For Peter,
there's a lot of information about it. And once a year, there's an annual conference that's related to it. The Bali Conference, BAILE. And we send somebody usually from our office every couple of years to participate.
I've seen that word. Yeah.
Many long years ago, I was part of the faculty, a student and then part of the faculty of the New School for Democratic Management. You can come in, darling. We're just talking. And some of those principles rose up there in an amazing way. It's like, one of the things I love about being an entrepreneur is that I get to make a choice between time and money. I don't know that I'm employable anywhere in my life because I'm not willing to accept the terms of wage slavery, right? And I have never been. I wasn't a good mill worker. I wasn't a good aide. There were so many things I wasn't good at. That I waited tables for 10 years because I could choose whenever I wanted to go into work or not. And, that flexibility is what I desire. Yeah. So that's one of the cruxes of this whole thing, too. It's like that allows creativity to emerge.
Huh. Well, yeah, totally. But I'm like, how does the structure of the B Corp, like what is it about the B Corp that opens up little I know about it is that it opens up the possibility of having more something like a triple bottom line or a quadruple bottom line, things like that.
Absolutely. People, planet, and profits.
So that's kind of the essence of it?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's a good way to explain it. Yeah, absolutely.
And then you can design that proportion however you
Feel it on. Exactly right.
Okay. Cool. Fascinating. Well, you know, that's yet another unexpected surprise that I get to.
You know, you live as long as we do, and a lot of things can happen in your life.
That's right. That's, there you go.
Well, so I love you a lot.